listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really glad to have with me once again John Kaiser. John Kaiser is an independent analyst based in San Francisco. He's covered the junior resource sector since 1983. That's just 2 years later than I started. Well, he has a background in the resource sector. I've known him for many years. He is very, very honest in the way he deals with these companies, very careful in the way he recommends things to his subscribers, and I respect him very much for his integrity and his abilities as well. John, thanks for joining me today.
Jay, it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Always good to have you, and before we go any further, let me tell people it's KaiserResearch.com, Kaiser, K-A-I-S-E-R, research.com, to learn more about John's work. John, Novo Resources is a company that I've been following now for 3 years or so. You know, it kind of reminds me in some ways of some of the companies that you follow. Scandium, I know, is one of your favorites. These things a lot of times take a lot of time and patience. Novo has taken quite a bit of my patience. I know Scandium and others have yours. But sometimes if you're looking for something extraordinary, you do have to be patient. And I was just really delighted that you have started looking at Novo because, as you know, it's one of my favorites. So I'd like to just put it out to you. Let me know and let our listeners know what your thoughts are about Novo Resources at this time. What are the possibilities, but what also are the risks that they should be aware of?
Jay, this is an extraordinary story, and we're going to have to break it down into a few little segments here. First of all, I've watched this story the last 3 years since you covered it. I never touched it because I always felt it was overpriced based on what it has, the Beaton's Creek. And even today in this new Purdy's Reward Comet Well area, the stock with 160 million shares trading at $1.50, $1.70, with 50% interest, 80% interest, it's still way ahead of itself. But What has completely intrigued me are the staggering implications if Quentin Hennig's bigger picture theory that this is the missing half of the Witwatersrand Reef turns out to be correct. I'd like to take your audience back to 1991 when the Lac de Gras diamond discovery was made in the Arctic Craton, and people knew this had potential for diamonds, and the Beers had even looked in that area. They hadn't found anything, so it was just regarded as this it failed craton that never really had anything like in the Kapwal Craton in South Africa or the Kalahari Craton in Botswana. But that 1992, a little junior, 60 Cents, put out news it had found diamonds. The news was never quite, strong enough to say, this is absolutely for sure. But within a year, that stock went to $60, $2 billion valuation. It turned out to be a major field. It turned out that the area was much bigger than the Diamet Minerals had gone after. There was an area the size of Switzerland staked. It was a huge, huge staking rush, and it helped transform the whole diamond industry around the world. This thing, I think, is one of those similar scale discoveries that's going to create a monster bull market for the junior resource sector, not just for the companies that will have managed to have a piece of this part of the Pilbara Craton in Western Australia, but also for all these out-of-the-box companies that where the management comes up with interesting theories for finding deposits undercover, like one of my favorites, Nevada Exploration Inc., with its groundwater stuff in Nevada's basin and range topography. So understanding this Witwatersrand connection, what Quentin and Novo were focusing on earlier may have been just a very far-removed distal manifestation of this phenomenon. This is what I'd like to talk with you about, all the theory behind this and why this million hectares that Novo now controls could make this not just a stock that goes to $5 to $10, but one that could go to $50 to $100. And I disclose, I have not even formally recommended it. I do not own the stock. I'm looking at this from the perspective of seeing one of these absolutely incredible discoveries emerging.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Beaton's Creek, of course, was what I like to call baby Witwaters Rand. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, the economics of that, I think your view was correct. It's very small. It's relatively small. Maybe 60,000 to 80,000 ounces is kind of what they're thinking. They're moving towards feasibility, a pre-feasibility study anyway right now, I think towards the end of the year, early next year. But it isn't the kind of thing that, you know, that's going to be a world changer. But this definitely seems to have that potential. So go ahead and talk to us a little bit about the theories that drove Quinton Hennigh to this basin area in northwestern Australia.
Well, first, some background about the Witwaters Rand Basin, which sits on the Kapfel Craton, one of the oldest cratons, actually probably the oldest craton in the world, formed 3.6 billion years ago. The Witwaters Rand reefs are only up to 2 meters thick. They are laterally extensive. They go down dip over 100 kilometers. They rim this big basin that may have been a giant inland lake or possibly the continental shelf of an ocean that was big. Yeah. The Earth was mainly ocean. The original Ur-continent, as they call it, the very first land that showed up, was smaller than Australia is today. And the theory was that whatever it was that rose in the uphill area, the greenstones and so on, were very mineralized, and erosion shed all this gold into the lake or the onshore area and created these alluvial deposits, which is why they're so very narrow. Now, what Quinton Hennigh has said is that the two dominant theories in the past 100 years, one, that this is all just eroded gold dragged down the hills and deposited in the deltas of the rivers draining into this lake or marine environment, that this is alluvial. He says this is not possible. The other theory is that the sulfur with the pyrite and the gold came in through later hydrothermal movement that somehow managed to penetrate just this horizon and create this very consistent laterally extensive reef of gold mineralization. Quinton's theory, and I've read his paper, that of his associates, and it's fascinating. He points out that back then, the Earth was a really, really different, nasty place. There was no oxygen. Volcanoes were spewing hydrogen sulfide into the air. The water was full of hydrogen sulfide. It's possible that the water itself became more saturated with gold than is anywhere near possible in the last billion and a half, 2 billion years. And the theory is that, like algal material, that's, you know, life that started growing about 3.6 billion years ago, in this lake or marine environment, it formed these mats of carbonaceous material. And there was this maybe of a couple thousand year window where something dramatic happened which caused gold literally to drop out of the seawater or lake water. Perhaps chemically helped along, catalyzed by the carbonaceous material sitting there in this shallow area off the hills, and that these nuggets literally grew. They didn't come from the hillsides, except maybe originally and got dissolved, but there was this mass precipitation event, which is why there is such an extraordinary range. Now, there's similar things around the world. For example, there's the Elliott Lake conglomerate system, which has uranium in it and not much gold. And there is uranium also associated with the Witwaters Rand Reefs. 1.6 billion ounces have been mined. Another billion are known to exist but are really too deep to access. But the Pilbara, if it was connected to this, and again, this knowledge is only like 50 years old when plate tectonics was finally understood and they were able to say, well, this looks similar. But now they say this was actually connected. It's possible that the Pilbara Craton, with its Hemsley Basin, was actually in the same part of this world undergoing the same precipitation events. Now, what has been discouraging is that although nuggets have been found in this Kakarata area near where the new Purdy's Reward target is, efforts to find gold have failed. There's been a fair bit of drilling done, deep drilling, to try and intersect, and they have found these quartz pebble conglomerates, but they have not had much uranium, and they've had even less gold, except in this small area of Beaton's Creek. And what changed about 12 months ago last August was Quinton got wind that somebody had used a metal detector to find large nuggets 350 kilometers to the west, close to Karaka, which is also known for these gold nuggets. People there run around on the beaches and actually find gold nuggets. And nobody has ever really found anything that is the source. And the news they put out a week ago was that they actually, on this property that they've optioned, they've actually blasted or chiseled out of the bedrock large sort of watermelon-sized, seed-sized gold nuggets that are very different. There's not much pyrite there. It's like the a different version, a much coarser version. Quinton has pointed out that the rocks are not as fine, you know, pebble conglomerate like they are in the Witwatersrand Reef and as they are at Beaton's Creek. They're a much coarser mix of greenstone basalts and stuff. So you're probably closer to the shore area. And the big picture theory is that this same precipitation event happened over here, except without the pyrite in it, and that we have a system of these fairly large nuggets, but distributed over a very large area, much larger than this particular 8-kilometer focus. So right now, the task is to see, okay, what have we got in our little 8-kilometer stretch? Can we measure it? They've got a 700-kilo bulk sample in to see what kind of grade it runs. Then they have to develop a method for how do you explore this? Do you? And they're thinking of using large diameter RC holes to basically sample the stratigraphy, and it's going to be extremely expensive. But if they can show that there is a grade sufficient to support open pit mining for the shallow part and underground for it, we have a potentially huge, huge discovery.
All right. Well, there's going to be some news coming out sometime soon, John, do you think, the 700 bulk sample?
Yes, this is what 700 kilos is. It's only 700 kilos, and they're developing the protocols for how do we go about measuring, because these are, it's not like it's continuous disseminated gold in this rock. It's fairly continuous in the Witwatersrand Reef. Here you have one maybe in this, square foot area, and then maybe another one over there. If you use an ordinary drill core, the odds of hitting one of these nuggets, which actually are significant when you divide that, the weight of that nugget over a ton of rock is a significant rate, you'll have a difficult time actually measuring it in the traditional way you do, where the gold is disseminated fairly evenly through any ton of rock.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be quite a challenge, I would think, is to try to determine what the grades are and then whether it's continuous over, let's say, that 8-kilometer strike length and then down dip and so forth. I mean, isn't that the biggest risk perhaps here is being able to determine, getting a handle on grade and continuity?
Yes, and that's what the market's focused on. They're sort of discounting the idea that we're talking like about 100 kilometers of maybe 60 kilometers going down to 1,700 meters. That they're discounting that scenario. They're just saying, okay, well, what do you have here? 5-10 million ounces, localized freak show where somehow these nuggets ended up in this sedimentary package. And yeah, so that's the battle that the company's going to fight over the next 3 to 6 months. But in 3 to 6 months, there will have been additional work done, probably holes drilled to confirm stratigraphy, and you'll see the market shift from saying, okay, this is a localized thing with cult people betting on the bigger picture thing, to everybody realizing this, the Witwatersrand Reef is present here undercover, was never found in the past because in the old times, people didn't really know what they were supposed to be looking for. The work done in other areas showed that, well, yeah, the Witwatersrand-type reef conglomerates are here, but there's no gold and even meaningful uranium in it. So this is a dead system. But all of a sudden, you have evidence that it is not dead, and it's a freak that it happens to be outcropping here. This entire area is largely undercover. These gold nuggets, they may have been found on the beach to the north, are essentially eroded away from original sedimentary basin rocks that had the horizons exposed and wiped out. So there you have now this million-hectare area that's going to become the focus of exploration. And if the lateral continuity is present, then that's the thing we still need to find out, because the Witz Reef, you know, it basically was a scarp that stuck out on the north, and somebody saw the horizon, and they chased it down dip about 30 meters until it became sulfides, and then they were stuck. And then they figured out how to use cyanide to get gold out of sulfides. And then some smart people realized this stuff must dip all the way into this big basin, and they staked all the down dip stuff. And that's how the giant South African gold mining houses were developed, and you had mines just rimming the entire sort of 400-kilometer stretch. And we could see something similar emerge here in this northwestern part of Australia, in the Pilbara Craton, where the Hemsley Basin is still present.
Oh, it's very, very exciting. No question about it. John, you've done an excellent job of explaining the story, I think. I want to thank you very much. Just with less than a minute left, I would think that security issues might be something else, too, because you've got this nugget effect. You got people out there. You know, the temptation is always strong to stick one of those things in your pocket rather than let the shareholders have it, right? You think that might be an issue, too, down the road, possibly?
Well, not in a commercial processing. I mean, you have a chain of custody methods, protocols. But it was kind of interesting watching the videos. It looked like an old-fashioned stock promotion con job where you set up all these suckers and you run around with a metal detector and then you bang away and, wow, look, gold! Yeah. I mean, that normally doesn't happen. That's why everybody's shaking.
Well, you and I know Quentin Henning, he certainly wouldn't sponsor anything like that. So, people will be people. John, you've done an excellent job. We're out of time. Thank you so much for your help on
all
this.
Right.
And we'll look
to
talk to you some more about this and some of your other interesting ideas, too, from time to time. Folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away, because Richard Mayberry is going to be with me, and he's going to talk about why dysfunction in government is actually a good thing. Well, it's not what we hear every day in the mainstream media, but that's what I think Richard's going to tell us. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Richard Mayberry.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Novo Resources focuses on the exploration and development of gold projects. Its flagship asset is the Beatons Creek Gold Project in Western Australia, where it is currently upgrading and expanding on its resources to produce an economic study in Q3 2017, followed by construction in Q1 2018. Novo enjoys a strong balance sheet and supportive shareholder support from the likes of Eric Sprott and Newmont Mining. It trades in Canada and the U.S. under the symbols NVO and NSRPF, respectively. A gold rush has begun. Recently, three of the largest gold mining companies announced strategic acquisitions in the Yukon Territories. Ahead of them was a group who had already consolidated the key claims covering the historic Klondike Gold Rush into one company, aptly named Klondike Gold Corp. Led by a team of accomplished geoscientists, the company is steadily advancing exploration to reveal the rich source of all that gold. The hunt for the next major discovery is well underway, and Klondike Gold's shareholders are strategically positioned. Stay ahead of the majors and follow KlondikeGoldCorp.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.